Well, I'll leave it up to you to decide what kind of a song this is. This is Psalm 19. To the leader, a psalm of David. The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Yet their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In the heavens, he has set a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom from his wedding canopy, and like a strong man runs its course with joy. Its rising is from the end of the heavens, and its circuit to the end of them, and nothing is hid from its heat. The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The decrees of the Lord are sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is clear, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is pure, enduring forever. The ordinances of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is your servant warned. In keeping them, there is great reward. But who can detect their errors? Clear me from hidden faults. Keep back your servant also from the insolent, and do not let them have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless and innocent of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer.
The desert is a strange and wild place. At night, it's very cold, but in the daytime, it can be burning hot. There's almost no water at all. The desert is also changing. The wind comes, and it blows, and it shapes and molds. The desert is never the same. One very early morning, a long, long time ago, a young man came out of his desert tent and climbed to the top of a desert crag. And because the sun had yet to rise into the sky, the air was cool and dark shadows were all around him. But over his head, the heavens were just ablaze with the glittering stars, which cast a luminous glow around the desert all around him. The young man looked to the east and saw that pale silver blade of the Dead Sea and the deep purple of the Moab Range. The opal sky above him turned golden, and with one leap, the sun just burst through like an eager youth away to claim his bride, or a runner springing from the mark. Silent as light, the celestial pageant unfolded. The stars which had danced the dark sky of the night were one by one, in a twinkle, giving away to the glowing radiance of the sun. In turn, the sun made its entrance into the heavens, bathing each part of desert life in glorious golden light. This transformation was as quiet could be. Not a word was spoken, but the music of the spheres was tumultuous, unrestrained joy. The silent, moving host of heaven spoke without words, of the power and the glory behind creation. And the young one up there on the desert crag was now bathed in the blazing heat of that fully risen desert sun, and the birds were calling, and the cicadas were singing, and the sheep were bleating as they searched out all of those precious tufts of grass. And the young man could just simply not contain himself for a moment longer. He threw back his head and he sang a duet with creation. The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims God's handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declare knowledge. But there is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard, yet their voice goes out to all the earth. In them, God has sent a tent for the sun, which comes like a bridegroom leaving his chamber, like a strong man running a course with joy. Its rising is from the ends of the heavens, and its circuit to the very end of them, and there is nothing hid from its heat. Oh, how the heavens are telling! Oh, how the heavens are singing! Oh, how the heavens are proclaiming the glory of God. That precious 19th psalm points to an old belief that was held by the ancient world and expressed by poets and philosophers, that the heavenly bodies, the sun and the moon and the stars, produce by their movement, a harmony of tones, actual tones, sounding day and night from one end of the world to the next. These voices of the universe are not heard by these human ears. They don't speak in a human language, but they exist and they can be perceived through the ears of our spirits. Shakespeare wrote about the music of the spheres. He says, "There's not the smallest orb which thou beholdest, but in his motion like an angel sings. Such harmony is in immortal souls. But whilst this muddy vesture of decay doth grossly close it in, we cannot hear it." But the psalmist has heard it. He knows what the stars are singing, the glory of creation and of the divine ground. Have you ever been to Grant's Grove? I've stood in Grant's Grove, which is an ancient grove of sequoias in Kings Canyon, which is just east of Fresno. I've stood beneath and beside the general himself, the General Grant tree. Science will tell you that the general is the largest sequoia in Grant's Grove. We'll tell you that this giant, which is the third largest tree in the world, is 267 feet tall, and 107.6 feet in circumference at its base. It will tell you that at breast height, its diameter is greater than any known tree in the whole world. It will also tell you how many houses could be built from it if it was to be chopped down and hewn into lumber. But is this all that the general would have to say to us if we had ears to hear him? Inches and feet and years and numbers of houses that he could make for us? What about that mysterious life that surges in his cells through the countless ages that have passed beneath his limbs? What would it tell us of the creative force that it knows so well that drew it up from a tiny acorn when Moses was a child? What might it tell us of the quiet conversations with countless generations of chipmunks that have scampered over its roots and birds that have nested in its branches? What song of praise would it sing of that constant vigil its maker kept over it as it grew from an innocent sprout to the wise elder of the forest? I have laid my head on the general's sturdy frame, and wrapped my puny arms around a very small portion of its trunk and longed to hear that song, those words, that music. But such an understanding is possible only by communion between humanity and the nature that we live within and through. Is such communion even possible for us? Our technical and overextended civilization has brought about a tremendous devastation of original nature, of the land, and of the animals and the plants. I went several years ago to a lecture by Kathleen Dean Moore at OSU, and I will never forget her words. She says, if you remember when it was announced that where you were when Kennedy was shot, how many of you? Raise your hands. Do you remember where you were that day? Okay, quite a number of you. You are in a generation that has since 1970 witnessed the death of 39% of the world's terrestrial wildlife. 39% of the marine wildlife and 76% of the freshwater wildlife. Those western meadowlarks that you might have heard singing in the morning of your childhood, some of them will never be heard again. Because they're gone. You heard them, your children won't. And if we don't do something today to stop this procession towards death, our grandchildren can just tear out half of the pages of their field guides because those pages will no longer be relevant. Our world is half as rich in life as it was when we were born. Half as rich. We are separated from this soil, this holy soil, by our machines. We speed through nature, we catch glimpses of it, but we never truly comprehend its greatness or feel its power or hear its divine music singing to us. I'm reminded of a scene from one of Chevy Chase's vacation movies. Terrible, wonderful movies. A family is on a trip across the country to Wally World, a Disneyland-like amusement park, and they can hardly wait to get there, and they have one unbelievably stupid trial and tribulation after another, but they keep plowing ahead anyway, onward to California and Wally World. And it just happens that they're going to be passing through Arizona on their way, and the father just insists that they really do need to stop at the Grand Canyon and see it. So to the children's dismay, the stop is planned, and the Grand Canyon is just up ahead, and the car comes to a screeching halt, and in about 5 seconds, everyone piles out of the car, takes one look, piles back into the car, and leaves. It probably would be a whole lot funnier if it wasn't such a true depiction of our lives these days. There is no time or energy for listening to the music of the spheres. And if the heavens have something to tell us, they better send it in an instant message or leave a voicemail, because that's probably the only way we're going to get it. The psalmist declares that all creation is shouting and that the heavens are proclaiming the glory of God. And it seems to me that most of us are not only failing to join in with that song, but we aren't even listening. So I want to suggest 8 very quick guidelines for those of us who do long to connect with the music of the spheres. They're pretty easy, pretty simple, pretty clear. 1. Slow down. We cause all kinds of problems for ourselves on the freeway when we slow down to look at the guy with the flat tire on the side of the road, but we can't seem to help but slow down, right? But every day the world offers up extraordinary opportunities to experience the presence of God in the beauty and in the relationships that surround us, and we rush right on by them. Why do we have time for one, but we don't have time for the other? One, slow down. Two, stop. We've simply got to do more than slow down. Sometimes we have to stop. Stop adding things in. Stop rushing. Stop the doing. Leave some space for being. I had a conversation with a friend the other day. She called me on the phone and she says, "Hi, Patty, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm sitting." "Oh, are you reading?" "No." "Are you watching TV?" "No." "Are you with somebody and you just can't talk?" "No." "Well, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm sitting." Stop. Three, shut up. I know that's rude. My mother said, never say that. But it needs to be strong for us to get the point. Shut up. Sometimes we need to just quit talking so much. We can't hear the trees. We can't hear the wind. We can't hear our neighbor. We can't hear our own souls crying out to us because we're just blabbing too much. Shut up. Four, exhale. Exhale your poison, your distractions. Exhale your opinions. Exhale your fears. Exhale your anxieties. Exhale your tensions. Breathe them out. Get rid of them. You can always breathe them back in later if you really need them. Make room for life. Make room for newness, for beauty, for hope, for new ideas. How about that? Fresh perspectives, maybe even better. Instead of using words to chisel our place in marble, perhaps we should just try breathing out all of that to make space for something else, for a change. Five, breathe in. You have to do them both. Breathe in. Breathe in God. Breathe in the spirit of life. Breathe in possibilities and potentials. Breathe in. Can you imagine the course of discourse in our legislature, for example, if they would all take the time to breathe out their anger, their frustration, their stubbornness, their power plays, and breathe in some compassion, some hopefulness, some kindness, some spirit of unity. It might even work wonders at our own dinner tables and at our school desk and in the conference room. Breathe in, God. Six, listen. Henry Nouwen was a fiercely astute observer of our worried, overfilled lives. And he insisted that the noise of our lives makes us deaf, unable to hear when we are called or from which direction. He said our lives have become absurd because in the word absurd, we find the Latin word surus, which means deaf. In our spiritual world, we need to listen to the God who constantly speaks, but whom we seldom hear in our hurried deafness. On the other hand, Nouwen reminds us that the word obedient comes from the Latin word audire, which means to listen. He believed that a spiritual life was a pilgrimage from absurdity to obedience, from deafness to listening. We can move from noisy worries and distractions to a life in which we can listen to the Spirit who seeks to guide and teach us. But we must choose to stop, be still, breathe in and breathe out, and listen. Seven, tune your life to the truth around you. So what is the truth around us? Boy, that's a hard one these days. What is the truth around us? Pilate asked that same question of Jesus. It was a rhetorical question, a cynical response to what Jesus had just said. Jesus said, "I have come into the world to testify to the truth." And Pilate says, "What is the truth?" 2,000 years later, the whole world breathes Pilate's cynicism. Some say truth is a power play, a meta-narrative constructed by the elite for the purpose of controlling the ignorant masses. To some, truth is subjective, the individual world of preference and opinion. Others believe truth is a collective judgment, the product of cultural consensus or political consensus, whatever that is, and still others flatly deny the concept of truth altogether. So what is the truth? Well, folks, those of us who are sitting in this church calling ourselves Christians ought to know the answer to that. Those of us who call ourselves Christians go to Jesus is a pretty darn good resource for the answer, because he says, I am the truth. I am the truth. In other words, his words and his way model for us the most profound truths by which we can live our lives. So when you're confronted with that question this week as you're watching the news and you're wondering what is the truth, put Jesus there in the middle. What does the truth say about what you just heard? What does the truth say about what you see happening? What does the truth say about what we should do and how we should respond to this hard world of ours? What is the truth? The truth we dare to tune our lives with will determine where our lives and this world will go. In other words, it matters. Remember Alice in Wonderland? Cheshire Cat, asked Alice, would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here? Well, that depends a great deal on where you want to go, said the cat. Well, I don't much really care where, said Alice. Then it doesn't really matter where you go, said the cat. Tune your life to the truth. 8, play your note. I was in a bell choir when I was a child, and I was given a bell to play. This is the bell I always played in the choir. It wasn't a very big bell, and I was a little disappointed for a long time in the bell I had because it wasn't a big bell. I wanted a big bell with a deep voice that I could ring, and everybody would hear it in the back, and they would say, there's Patty's bell. Boom. That's the bell I wanted to play. But I had just a little bell. My teacher said, this is a C. This is an important bell. You're going to play this bell a lot. You've got to pay attention. Because if you don't pay your bell, Patty, the song is not going to be right. Play your bell. I do declare we are each given a set of notes to play in this life, and they represent our skills and our passions and our dreams and our hopes and our motivations, our values, our truths. And if we've tuned our lives to the truth, then those notes are essential to the well-being of the world. They matter. They must be heard. Doesn't matter how old we are, how young we are, what's the condition of our bodies or our minds. It doesn't matter. We have a note to play. To not play our notes is to leave the world less than whole, less than what God has intended. It doesn't matter how extraordinarily ordinary our voice may be. What matters is that we make it heard. Play your note. So there we are. Number 9, we go back to the beginning and we begin again. To slow down and stop and be quiet and breathe out and breathe in and listen and tune our lives to the truth and play our notes and then go back to the beginning and start all over again. Every single day. That is how the music of the spheres is heard in our souls. The heavens are telling, shouting and singing and proclaiming the glory of God. And when we invest our lives in doing the same, we are living the gospel for today. Will you pray with me? Most gracious and loving God, sometimes it truly seems that we've lost the ability to see your glory. Even though we are surrounded by the glory of your creation and the multitude of ways you are present in our daily lives and relationships, in our busyness and our overcommitment, in our obsession with the latest technological miracle gizmo, we are distracted and think perhaps your glory has waned through the centuries. We look at money or medals or last person standing triumphs and exclusive only for the privileged few accolades, and we call these glorious, forgetting how they tarnish after just a few minutes. Most loving and forgiving God, we sometimes forget how to recognize the glory that lives in the sacrifice of a mother, for whom feeding a child takes monumental effort each day, in the compassion of a stranger who gives his time and talent to care for the sick and dying souls, in the humility of a well-qualified professional who uses her connections and skill to ensure the success of small projects that bring life to the least, in the courage of a peacemaker who stands empty-handed against tanks and bombs, or who chooses to serve and love an enemy. Oh God, open our eyes to your glory all around us, the glory of crosses and open graves in hopeless situations, the glory of your presence and creativity in dark and ugly and fearful places, and teach us to give ourselves to you in glorious, humble service. Teach us to be both heralds and couriers of this glory, so that it may be seen to cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. Amen.